Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Connor Newt here with you. Usually, we would be joined right now by Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman. But he texted us right before the segment to inform us that he's lost his voice. So Elliot Friedman will join us tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And Willie, I know that you can understand what Elliot is going through. I was reminded during the break of when you lost your voice during the season. I specifically recall a game in overtime in Minnesota, and you were hurting, my friend. You were.
That was the closest I've ever come to having to leave the broadcast in the middle of the broadcast. Mm-hmm. That was a bad sinus infection that just hit me hard that day. Like it just crept up, and it wasn't great about a week after that. But that game in particular, I had to call in my buddies. We had to get Hal Gill for the third guy, and I basically let Hal Gill and Chris Mason talk for about 80% of the time. I only spoke when I had to. And then you guys might remember this game. It was in Minnesota, and Steven Stamkos scored with 0.1 seconds on the clock.
Yes, I do remember
that. Send it to overtime.
And I thought, oh no, Willie's voice!
I mean, I was screaming as loud as I could scream, and not much was coming out. But I was like, Stamkos! It didn't sound like that. I was just like, something come out. I hope this air turns into something that people can hear. And then they had the weird ending where the goal got knocked off.
Yes.
The peg,
yes.
And they allowed the winning goal. Very controversial.
They got hosed. They got hosed. Oh, I remember that.
That was the wrong interpretation of that rule. But yes. What a game to have that happen.
But I was
so, yes, I sympathize with Elliot. And Elliot, if you're out there or, you know, if somebody, I know the remedy that the doctor gave me. Thank goodness. Dr. Seibert, who works at the Vanderbilt, he's one of the doctors that the team mm-hmm. is affiliated with. He's worked with a lot of singers. Man, that guy helped me out a ton. And I wish I'd have seen him before that game.
Well, Elliot will rest up. I mean, look, he's been traveling all over the country for the Stanley Cup final, back and forth between Vegas and Raleigh. So we totally understand. I do remember watching that game and hearing Willie make that call on the Stamkos goal and saying, I think I sent a message to the group and I was like, yeah, Willie's not coming into work tomorrow. I think Willie needs a break for talking for 3 hours, but we will catch up with Elliot tomorrow at 5 instead of today. I do want to revisit our conversation from the beginning of the show on Jeffrey Simmons. Earlier in the show, we talked about Robert Saleh's plan for Jeffrey Simmons, and that means fewer snaps in the 2026 season. Saleh believes that would make Simmons even more dangerous, even after Simmons had the best year of his career last year, one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL this past season. But Jeffrey Simmons also discussed his contract situation. His contract expires in 2027. And look, when Jeffrey Simmons gets a new deal, it's going to be a big one. So yesterday he was asked about his contract situation. Here is what he said.
When it comes to your contract, are you wanting to get something done before the start of training camp? Or do you look at how the money's exploding and say, hey, let's let some other guys sign before I sign so I can get an even better deal?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is since I got to Tennessee, this organization been nothing but good to me. This organization we've been on the same page since I got here. So when it come down to the contract, I let everything plays out. You know, like I said, since I got here, I don't think we have me in the front office, me and Miss Amy, then everyone been on the same page. And whenever it's time to talk contract and whenever it's time to get that stuff out of the way, I know my agent, Ty and them, and then them, they're going to work together to make sure it's done the right way. You know, one thing, when it comes down to that contract, we know how messy it could get. And that's not what I'm looking for, especially going on year eight. Like I said, this organization been nothing but good to me. So I'm not, you know, so focused on the contract right now. Like I said, my goal this offseason is let me go work my tail off and get ready for training camp.
Now, here's my question. In light, Willie, of the New York Knicks winning the NBA title, it's been brought up so many times in the wake of the Knicks championship that Jalen Brunson took a significant pay cut to join the New York Knicks in the hope that the team would use the money to build around him. And that's precisely what the Knicks did, and they reaped the benefits by winning the championship. I do wonder if Jeffrey Simmons would consider doing the same thing if it meant helping him win the Super Bowl with the Tennessee Titans.
Only he can answer that question. He certainly set the table for that kind of thing. I think that Jeffrey Simmons has now hit sort of that mark that a Philip Forsberg has hit, a Roman Josi, you know, just a guy that they have kept, that they probably had a window where they, if they wanted to consider trading him and get big assets, they could have. We talked about it in a lot of depth, a lot of different times for a long time, but they went the other way. They were like, this is a staple guy that we want to build around, even though he's starting to hit an age where you start to wonder how much longer he can be dominant, but they believe in him. And so I do wonder, with everything that Jeffrey Simmons said, and Derek had some really interesting comments about this at the beginning of the show, you know, he sounds like it's more about wanting to make it happen in Nashville for the Titans than it is breaking the bank. So I'm really curious about that aspect of it, especially in light of the Brunson thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he, whatever he gets, he would have earned it in his next contract. And I think that he's at a space in his career that the deal is going to make sense for everyone. Will it be potentially a record-setting deal? I don't know. But if I'm just thinking and listening to Jeff, no, it's not going to be a record-setting deal. It's going to be a deal that respects him but keeps him in Nashville for the remainder of his career. So that's why I said less would have been more. He could have just, you know, said what he said at the first, like the first 5 to 7 seconds of what he said. That's all he needed to say, because I think that would have made it very clear to everyone. Jeff wants to be here, but he's about the team, and that eventually I'm sure they'll get a deal done. That's all I was saying. I mean, there's no question that I think the Titans will get a deal done, and I think Jeffrey will position himself so they can get a deal done.
Let's go to Andrew on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Andrew, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, so I was thinking about this as you all started this segment, and it occurred to me. So Simmons, obviously, you know, he's a smart guy. He knows that he's probably at the peak of his career, if not getting close to it. He's not going to get that much better for that much longer until he starts to decline. So as far as getting his last really big payday contract-wise, I think he needs to take that into consideration. And I'm wondering, if he takes a discount and we end up being bad, then not only is he taking less money, but he's on a team that maybe can't win the Super Bowl, even though, of course, Saleh and company are going to talk about it as if we can in the next few years. So my question is he thinking maybe he and his agent wait for a little while, maybe closer to the trade deadline, to get a contract in place so there's no messy guaranteed money on the Titans end, and he can kind of see how the first several weeks go before he even thinks about doing a new contract? Maybe I'm missing something here, but I'd love to get you all's thoughts on that.
Thank you, Andrew.
I mean, I think for all parties, if they don't want this to drag out, And we've heard from Borgonzi, and obviously we know how Sala and Amy feels about Jeff. But the sooner you get a deal done, the better you can put it behind you. They may, if they can't get something. This is how I think a lot of times in, say, a guy like Jeffrey Simmons' position. If you can't get a deal done before the season, then you tend to just let me worry about football. Let me concentrate on football, and then we'll pick up the contract on the other side. That's why I think they're going to try to figure something out where if there's not a contract on the table, there is guidelines within, you know, like a framework of a contract, and we just need to figure out some little small things to try to get it done. But outside of that, if they don't have anything done before the season, I mean, not even a framework, I think then Jeff will sort of pivot to, hey, listen, let's just worry about after the season. I'm going to take in good faith that we're going to get something done after the season. I'm going to remain a Titan, but I want to concentrate on the football.
Willie, what are your thoughts on Andrew's question?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to go, but I think they've committed to, you know, trying to make this happen. And I think the best way to go is to try to get it done before the season starts, because I think we're all curious, especially with the amount of excitement and perception of one stat for a defensive player, and that's sacks, or a defensive lineman, that's sacks. You know, if you believe what you read in the what they're trying to do is set him up to get more one-on-ones, be in there on the key pass downs, and that could lead to a lot more sacks, which is one thing that has been, you know, the perception against it. Well, he, you know, he's a dominant player, but where are the sacks? Where are the numbers? Tackles for loss, all of that. I think it might behoove them to get the deal done before he has a year, if the solid defense hits, which you hope it does, where he has 14 sacks or something.
You also have to keep in mind that the Tennessee Titans are going to have to sign Peter Skoronski to a major extension soon
as
well.
They've got a lot of cap space.
Yes.
Right? You got plenty of cap space to get those two things done. They're excited to have guys that they want to re-sign. There've been so few of them over the years. But I think what you have to hope is you keep enough money around to add the right unrestricted free agents. And, you know, if you've drafted better, that in the coming years you have guys that you want to sign to that second contract. I mean, it's been a ridiculously low number of draft picks they've had the last 5-6 years that they've signed to a second contract.
The next guy outside of Peter would be Cedric, right? Or J.C. Latham, one of the two. But I think those are guys that I think they're going to earmark. Obviously, Jeffrey Simmons, and then Peter Skoronski, and then Cedric Gray. Cedric may be more so next season to see how he fits in his defense, but I think he's going to have a hell of a year within his defense. I think Peter, just like Jeffrey, they probably want to get something done sooner rather than later.
Let's go to Mike on our phone line. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to leave a comment that here we go again, right before training camp. We're in controversy with Jeffrey Simmons, and is he going to sign or not? And this is a bad thing that we don't need to go down again another year. What I'm worried about is that we're going to get all entangled with this, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent with the quarterback situation, Cam Ward, and the backup. And I just want to know what's his name, Zerlinski or
Trubisky?
Yeah, I can't even pronounce his name. Who is he? And can he carry us if Cam goes down for 2-3 games? Are we going to end up, you know, just going ahead and accepting 2-3 games, maybe more, if Cam goes down? Can this guy bring us a victory or two? And already in this season, and I'm just sick and tired of it, I want to see a solid front going into this season that we don't have all these damn controversies.
Thank you for the call, Mike. Let me.
There's no controversy.
There's no controversy with Jeffrey Simmons. He's under contract. He's not holding out. He's not holding in.
No.
He's got a contract. He's going to be on the field. As for Mitch Trubisky, I mean, he was the second overall pick in 2017. His career has not panned out that way. If Cam Ward were to get injured at any point this coming season. I think Trubisky is solid enough to hold down the fort for a few games. He has familiarity with Brian Daboll. That's why he came to Tennessee. So I don't see any controversies. There's no controversy with Jeffrey Simmons. He's not holding out for a new contract. You know, we'll cross the if Cam Ward gets injured bridge when we get to it.
Yeah.
But hopefully I hope that answers your questions.
Hopefully we won't.
Well, I think I would add, and I think this will be thing. I'm curious how they use Levis, if Levis has any part in this script. But the idea of Trubisky is number one, and he has accepted the role. He mentioned it, you know, almost unsolicited, that he wants to be the mentor. Remember all that scuttlebutt a few years ago when they drafted Levis, and Ryan Tannehill said, he just sort of said offhandedly, not really thinking about what he was saying. He had made that one comment that got caught in print and everybody lost their minds, that he wasn't going to be the mentor to Will Levis because he was still the starter, was his where he was coming from. But Trubisky said, yeah, I'm coming in to be his mentor. But that is the job of the backup quarterback. If your starting quarterback is out for the season, your season is usually screwed unless you've got Steve Young as the backup. And it's been a long time since people have backups like Steve Young for the 49ers all those years ago. But if he can give you a win or two in a couple weeks, that will be the key. And Trubisky really hasn't had to play in years, right? He has been just a backup that hasn't gotten in.
I'm looking to see how many games Mitch Trubisky has played in recent years. Mitch Trubisky, he did appear in four games last season. He has not started a game since 2023 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I have no recollection of Mitch Trubisky on the Pittsburgh Steelers, but that's besides the point. One texter on our previous caller says, well, he was a treat. I love people who are glass half full kind of people. I mean, look, we need some people who are glass half full, some people who are glass half empty. It's just a way of life. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, an interesting comment from Titans quarterbacks coach Shea Tierney on something we've discussed a lot in the past few weeks regarding Cam Ward. We'll play that coming up next and get more into your reaction. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025. The gang, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. During the break, we have SportsCenter on in the studio, and they were showing a Cam Ward clip. When was the last time you think a Cam Ward clip was aired on SportsCenter?
Last time a Titan clip was aired on SportsCenter. Really? Like that.
That is a good question. That was more focused.
What was the news?
It was just about improving at OTAs, you know, that sort of
stuff
thing.
We've been talking
about. But it was SportsCenter and not like today's NFL?
No, it was SportsCenter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at Cam Ward. Okay. I was more focused on the corner of the screen where it said Toy Story 5 in theaters tomorrow because I've got a date with my son to go see Toy Story 5 on Saturday. And this is one of those, man, I'm old moments because I remember when I went to see Toy Story, the original film, in 1995 at the tender age of 6. And now I get to take my 4.5-year-old son to see Toy Story 5 this weekend. So what was that moment like?
Are Buzz and Woody like 75 years old?
They gotta be old, Willie.
They are antiques. I mean,
the kid has had to have grown up too.
Well, in the end of Toy Story 3 is Andy gives away the toys before he goes to college. Okay. So Andy's out of the picture.
Which is where it should have ended.
Not coming back?
That's where it should have ended?
Yes.
You could certainly make that argument. You could have made that argument also for Toy Story 4, but you know, people are going to, I'm spending my money. It's going to make millions of dollars.
The problem.
Yeah, hey, you're the target audience.
I mean, don't blame me. Blame Arlo.
You're the target audience.
I mean, how can I say no to that face?
Parents with kids, little ones.
This is true.
So there you go.
Connor, you'll learn that one day.
you think?
What was that laugh?
That's my yeah right laugh.
Wait, that was you or Derek?
That was me. Oh, I've already experienced it.
Oh, I thought it was Derek laughing at the idea of Connor having children.
Oh, no.
No, that's me laughing at the idea because I'm going to die alone.
No, you're not.
Oh, come on.
You may choose to, but.
Single lady, 615-737-1025. If you want to talk to Connie, the two-tone kitty cat.
What'd you?
Nootsie.
You know?
See, you ain't going to get no girlfriend like that if you have him introduce you to
him.
Sounds
like a hotline.
Exactly.
This isn't 1992 anymore.
This is not a 1-900 number, folks. It is a 615 number. Some of you may get that reference.
I got that reference.
Okay. One texter says, should have stopped at Toy Story 3. I mean, we can talk Toy Story if you want, but I'd rather talk about the Tennessee Titans. So we've talked so much about Cam Ward, obviously, and his accuracy, obviously, and his completion percentage in practice. And we've talked about how it's a bit of a fool's errand, I think, to track completion percentage in practice and use it as a barometer for how a quarterback is performing. Well, Tennessee Titans quarterback coach Shea Tierney was asked about this. This must have been yesterday. And I thought he had a really interesting response. Here was Titans quarterback coach Shea Tierney.
He has a lot of high percentage throws built in for him. How much do you think that could help the accuracy as well?
Well, I think, you know, you're getting into a discussion, really, that's what type of play are you trying to – what's the intent of the play, right? So when we – have a play called, when Dave sends in a play, we know what we're trying to get done. Are we trying to take a shot? Are we trying to hit it downfield? Which is obviously when you're throwing it downfield, lower percentage, right? Is it intermediate? So are we trying to get a chunk? Or is it a short one where we're just trying to get the ball out of our hands and completing the ball to basically augment the run game? You know, like that's what you're trying to do with some of those. So does that help drive completion percentage up? Yes. That doesn't necessarily mean your accuracy is better because you're calling a high completion play and now we're hitting 75% of our passes and everybody thinks, oh, he's got 75%. He's accurate. That's not always the case. An accurate passer to me is somebody who can execute the intent of the play call and hit what we're trying to hit. And if we're hitting those spots that we're trying to hit based on the play call, that's an accurate passer. Completion percentage is, it lies a lot.
So that was Shea Tierney, Titans quarterbacks coach, on the phenomenon of completion percentage. Willie Donick, your thoughts?
Interesting. I mean, I love conversations like that. I am reminded of the stat that I think you threw out there, it was maybe earlier this week or late last week, Adam, about they're, I think the Titans ranked 31st last year in some of those wide receiver screens.
Yes.
That are, and Shea Tierney, and it wasn't that they were necessarily incomplete passes, but even the ones they completed,
I think the stat was the Titans ranked second. This was courtesy of the Athletic Football Show. The Titans ranked second in the percentage of screens they ran, but 31st in success rate on those plays.
Right, so either an incompletion that would be unsuccessful or a ball that's complete, which I would think often is the case, but doesn't get the yardage that moves the needle at all. Like it's if it's third down and eight and you get 6 yards, then that's really doesn't matter unless you're going to go for it on fourth down. But that's not getting the job done. You got to move the chains. There's different ways that the sites measure success of a play, but I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say that this completion percentage lies, but I know what he's talking about. But it's a well-known fact, right, that the better passers over the years, the completion percentage every 10 years seems to go up, right? It used to be if you completed, you know, back when I was first watching football, if you completed over 50% of the passes, then, hey, okay, that's not bad. But the passing game was so different back then. And now the game has evolved so much, especially since the West Coast offense and Joe Montana, who was one of the first that I can remember that was up there in that 60-65% because they had those three-step drops, boom. Like, it's just now a standard, right? If you're not at a certain percentage, if you're not over 60, then everybody's wondering why.
I don't – accuracy doesn't in Coach said, accuracy doesn't always equates to – a higher percentage of completions because there are a lot of variables within that. You can be accurate, but the defensive guy can knock the ball down. You can be accurate, the wide receiver can drop it. you can be accurate wide receiver falls. So there are a lot of variables that goes into, you know, being, you know, having that accuracy tied to the completion percentage of a quarterback. There are some quarterbacks that are damn accurate, and the offense that they're playing in allows them to enhance that even more. Brock Purdy. He said Brock Purdy was probably one of the best accurate passers out there.
Salah said that.
But the offense allows him to be that way. Even though he has the accuracy, it matches up with the completion percentages because of the type of quarterback he has. You can have somebody completing a bunch of passes, but you asked them to throw it down the field or asked them to throw that intermediate route and put it in places they need to put it, they can't do it. But if I want to get your percentage, you know, your passing percentage up, I can do that very easily. The Titans tried to do that last year, and a lot of it was to the detriment of the offense because they didn't, on those quick screens, they didn't get yardage. It wasn't a positive play in their playbook.
I'm looking.
I would put it this way in general terms, that any one stat, right, I think this is what we've learned over the years, that, you know, it used to just be about what's on the back of the football card or what's on the back of the baseball card, like RBIs in baseball. If you have 100 RBIs, yeah, that's good up to a point, but there's ways to look at it on other levels. You know, how did you get 100 RBIs? Did you always come up with second? If I always came up with the bases loaded, then I ought to have 100 RBIs, right? If I never came up with anybody on base, that's certainly going to affect how many RBIs have. Just like in completion percentage, the passes that you call are going to affect your completion percentage, mm-hmm. right? There's variables involved. Just like we always joked about when people report so-and-so was 9 for 17 at practice, well, with no context, right? You say, well, that's bad. Well, how do we know? We don't know what were the plays. What were they working on? And if you just wanted completion percentage, all you would have to do is have Adam stand 2 feet to my left, Derek stand 2 feet to my right, snap the ball to me, I throw it to one or the other. My completion percentage could be 100%. But that doesn't mean we're moving the ball at all.
There's a direct correlation, I think, when it comes to accuracy and completion percentage. I don't think completion percentage means that you're an accurate passer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what coach is trying to say.
Right.
And they want him to become a more accurate passer because the offense is going to be set up to where if he's more accurate, then you're going to see him in the 65-67% when you're talking about completion. Look at prime example. Look at Josh Allen. It was just once after those first 2 years, once he became more of an accurate passer, the offense basically allowed him to not only show his accuracy, but also that his percentage completion percentage was up as well.
I'm looking at league averages in completion percentage over the years. In 2025, the league average completion percentage was 64.3%.
Wow.
And for basically the past 20 or so years, the league average completion percentage has been in the 60s. As you go further back, it starts dropping into the high and mid 50s. For example, in 1999, the completion percentage league average was 57.1%.
Wow.
If you go back even further to 1987, the league average completion percentage was 54.8%. So it has evolved over the years, to your point, Willie.
Yeah, well, let's go back even further. You know, one of the stats that gets talked about with some Hall of Fame guys like Kenny Stabler and Terry Bradshaw.
Give me a year and I'll tell you the league average completion percentage.
You're talking about the 70s.
Take 1978, 79. Like, so the heyday of the
1978, the league average completion percentage was 53.1%.
Man.
And now it's 64.3%.
For his career, Terry Bradshaw completed 52%. But he's a Hall of Famer. He won 4 Super Bowls, but that was just how the game was played back then, right?
Yeah.
This was how it was.
It was more of a run-heavy, playing sort of a phone booth type of offense, and that's pretty much how defenses played, too. It was about being bigger and not faster.
And you would attack down the field. When you did throw, right, you were probably throwing a lot more low-percentage passes. It just wasn't designed the same way.
Neil on our text line says, Connor isn't going to get a woman if you keep calling him Connie.
Exactly. That's what I keep saying.
You're damn right, Neil.
Exactly. You do have a point there, Neil. Connor, the big strapping gentleman. How about that?
That sounds
I'll give you one more. Yeah. Going back one more. Look, Connor, we got you, man. We're going to help you out. If we're going to make this a thing on the show. We're gonna see this through. We're gonna see this through.
Thanks, Willie.
I'll give you one more example before Terry Bradshaw. How about Joe Namath? Take a guess on his completion percentage for his career.
48%.
50.8.
You're right. Both of you are straddling it. 50.1% for his career. He's a Hall of Famer. Exactly.
There is hope for you, Cam Ward. That's all I'm saying. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction and wrap up the show. Coming up next,
Vin Ginnan and Donick at 1025.
The game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Thank you to Mike Herndon of PaulKaharsky.com and new Predators forward Ross Colton for joining the program today. Our interview with Ross Colton, by the way, has been posted. So if you missed it, make sure you go and find it. A really interesting conversation with the newest member of the Nashville Predators. On tomorrow's program, Chad Withrow will join us, as he always does on Fridays. Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic will join us at 4. He wrote a film study on Cam Ward at The Athletic. It was published this morning. He will join us to talk about what he found after grinding the tape on Cam Ward. And Elliot Freeman, who was supposed to join us today, but he's lost his voice. He says he's going to be ready to go tomorrow at 5. So we will catch up with Elliot tomorrow at 5. But Derek, during the break, you asked me, we were talking about league average completion percentage over the years. And you asked me how many passes quarterbacks attempted on average over the years. And you wondered, in 1968, when Joe Namath won the Super Bowl with the New York Jets, because Willie mentioned his completion percentage was what for his career, Willie?
50.1%.
Quarterbacks on average threw 26.8 passes per game in 1968, compared to 32.1 this past season.
Well, so not quite as much, not as many as I would have thought.
So what's interesting is if you, between 2011 and 2021, quarterbacks were averaging at least 34 pass attempts per game, with the high being 35.7. Over the past 4 or 5 years, it's gotten down into the low 30s, 32, 33. So it's actually gone down a bit.
Yeah, it runs in cycles to a degree, right?
Yes.
I think teams are figuring out that because everything is so pass happy, and so they're getting players on defense to sort of match that, and now it seems like the pendulum is sort of going the other way. Offenses are more inclined to run the football, especially if they have two backs. So they're more inclined to run the football than sit there and throw the football, you know, 40 times a game.
I do want to get y'all's thoughts on this reading from Front Office Sports. On Thursday, the Senate Commerce Committee voted 19-9 to send an amended version of the Protect College Sports Act to the Senate floor for a full vote. It's the first time that a college sports bill has passed a committee vote in the Senate in the 6 years that college sports stakeholders have been lobbying in Congress. Now, if I'm reading this correctly, this bill has gone through some amendments. The Big Ten and SEC continue to have opposition for the bill, but the amendments attempt to ameliorate some of those concerns about the Super League provision.
Hold on. Ameliorate? I've never heard that word before.
I was about to say ameliorate.
Okay, hold on. Ameliorate. All right, we've got two words of the day, acquiesce and ameliorate. Ameliorate means to make better or more tolerable.
Ameliorate.
Ameliorate.
I like that. Ameliorate. So, Connor, you have something interesting to say over text about this. Just let the listeners know, because so, I found it very
before you do, Connor, let me just read from this story to set it up. So this, again, from Front Office Sports. Dozens of conferences, including the Big 12 and ACC, have come out in favor of the bill, as has the NCAA. But it continues to have opposition from the Big Ten and SEC, the conferences said in a joint statement. The opposition comes even though the newest version of the bill ameliorates their concern about the Super League provision. The original version effectively prevented a Big Ten-SEC merger only, while the new version sent to the Senate floor prevents this for all four power conferences.
So what I gathered from this in the SEC and the Big Ten kind of joining forces and putting out the statement opposing it is they want to have their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. What I notice about the SEC and the Big Ten is obviously those are the two super conferences in the nation. They get the most transfers. They bring in the most TV money. They are the ones benefiting the most from the modern-day college football. Now, you have some outlier examples from other conferences, and like Miami and the ACC, Texas Tech and the Big 12. You've got Notre Dame out there. Clemson, I think, sort of comes to mind there too, Florida State. But for the vast majority of who's benefiting the most, it's the SEC and the Big Ten. So to me, it makes sense why they're opposing it. They want to leave the door open to where if it comes to having a super conference and they feel that they can get more money, more TV deals, and more what have you from that, they want to leave the door open to that. They also don't want a rules restriction on the thing that's helping them thrive the most, and that's getting these guys that have transferred from a G5 to a lower-end Power 4 team to now Alabama. That's what's helping them. So, of course, they're going to disapprove of it because they don't want it to lose something that benefits them.
For me, this sounds like or reeks of, like you said, Adam, we're not going to do what's best for everybody. We're just going to do what's best for us two right here. And eventually, if y'all don't, acquiesce to us, then we will leave and develop our own super conference. So that's why everybody's going to have to get on board here, if indeed they truly want to do what's best for college sports, not just football, but I think all the sports is, they get together and figure out something where, the Big Ten and the SEC isn't, necessarily being, the shot caller, so to speak, in anything that goes on, even though we know they're the two most powerful conferences. But yet and still, if you want this thing to continue to thrive, I think you have to incorporate everybody and do what's best for the whole.
Willie, what do you think?
I don't feel ameliorated yet. And I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel if I'm ameliorated. But I do have a question. Like, I admire the Congress people that are really working hard on this. But at the same time, it's such a complex bear, this whole thing. It's so many different colleges that you're trying to put together a set of rules for. I just wonder who is shaping their. They don't have time. They're trying to deal with our country's problems, the world's problems. How could you possibly spend the amount of time it would take to tackle this, right, when it's so complicated? I just wonder how that could happen. I know their heart's in the right place. They're trying, but like, who's shaping their beliefs? How are they going about this process? I'm really curious.
I think they're looking at it from the standpoint of we just want to give y'all a framework and then y'all figure it out. And they seem to can't figure it out for whatever reason. Y'all asking government for help. They're trying to give you help. But yet and still, y'all don't even want that.
I mean, I don't really have much it's
crazy because there's problems within collegiate sports. When we're talking about this stuff, and you go outside of the network to ask those that can make laws, you ask them to, okay, do this for us. They come back and they say, hey, listen, this is a template. This is what we got now. And y'all telling, no, we don't want that. It makes no sense.
And I can also picture it from this point, from a member of Congress. I'm sure there's some people in Congress that would be like me. If Derek, you said, hey, I'm having some problems with my car. Let me show you what's going on under the hood. And you open up the hood and it's college athletics under the hood. And this congressman is looking at you, go, this looks very complicated. I'm out of here. No, I can't help you. You know, I'm sure some congresspeople are like, I want no part of this bill. Like, just tell me, like, I don't know. Like, that, how, it, there, it's, they're so difficult to figure out. I don't, and we talk about it all the time. You know, there's this hope that someday there will be the czar of college sports or college football, Nick Saban, all of this stuff. But I don't even know if that person, even if he could do it, would want to do it.
This is a very complex situation for everybody. And they can only blame themselves for this complex situation that they're in. And honestly, the only way to fix it, and you still may not fix it, you may end up, you know, causing another problem, is that, frankly, just let these kids be employees. Work it from a labor standpoint. Just let's just go at that, you know, because it seems like everything else that you're trying, you either don't think it's the right thing or you can't, you know, get everyone together, you know, to figure out, you know, let's do something right or let's do what's right for college athletics.
The World Cup is ongoing. Two games are final. Switzerland defeats Bosnia 4-1. Czechia and South Africa finished tied at 1. Canada is whooping Qatar right now. 3-0 in Vancouver. Mexico versus South Korea tonight in Guadalajara. Tomorrow, the U.S. continues its World Cup against Australia. I want to see some more goals. Also happening tomorrow, Scotland versus Morocco at Gillette Stadium. I hope the I don't know if the Patriots can be involved in this, but I hope someone has flown in every beer known to man to Gillette Stadium tomorrow. How quickly do you think Gillette Stadium will sell out of beer tomorrow?
It will take maybe 30 minutes into the game, meaning game minutes.
Okay, so yeah. Near the end of the first half. Yes. Willie, are you as optimistic as Derek?
All I know is I saw some clips, and you guys might have sent them to me, of some Scottish fans in New York.
Yes.
Like, I thought, when I saw that, I was like, well, maybe Scotland's next game is at the Meadowlands or something. Did these Scottish fans go to New York just because they heard there was beer in New York?
Possibly.
And then now they're going back to Boston for the next game and hoping that replenished the beer supply. Like, this Tartan Army is just amazing.
But you know why I say basically halftime is because that's when everybody's going to rush to get their beers. And after that, it's over.
I do wonder if there's going to be a limit put on the number of beers per person. That
there would be some fights in the concourse if you say, no, you can only have two beers to take with you.
I don't know where Scotland would go next. And if they advance the next group, I don't know where they would play next. But that city better prepare itself. Like, if you're one of the cities that could be hosting Scotland, you're like, all right, we need to call in the troops.
We need to plan.
Yeah. Everybody, go to the store, buy some extra beer just in case. Bring as many cases as you can.
Keep a couple of cases in your trunk.
I still want to know when the last beer was served and the person said, that's it, we're out.
Oh,
what kind of beer was it? What kind of beer was it? Like, they were like, okay, there's no options left. I have to drink the beer. This is it. But it got passed over until that was it.
That's a good question. Now, it doesn't appear that Scotland's next game has been scheduled, so I don't know where it's going to be. But if you could be hosting Scotland, be prepared. That'll do it for us today. Thank you to Mike Herndon of PaulKaharski.com and new Predators forward Ross Colton for joining the program tomorrow. Chad Withrow at 3:20. Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic at 4. Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet at 5. We've got a full show planned to wrap up the week. So join us, won't you? We'll also have a new word of the day. Here's what I want y'all to do.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to use the word acquiesce or ameliorate in conversation this evening. Then I want you to text back in at 3:00 tomorrow and tell us how it went. I want to know if the person you said it to said, what the hell are you talking about?
ameliorate like Willie and Derek did. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Be love. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear us. You hear this music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We will be back on these airways starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 102.5. And as I always say, we're going to be talking and
you're going to be listening.
Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.